Essay with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know. Oh boy, this is so exciting. I'm going to hold up the book to the camera because it is so beautiful. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Daniel Jose Older. And the name of his book is Last Canto of the Dead, an Outlaw Saints novel. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Well, I am holding up this book, and it is a beautiful book, isn't it?
Isn't that cover something? I love it.
Well, you
know, they did amazing work.
When I find a book like this, beautiful cover, beautiful paper, I always say, well, somebody up there loves you. And in your case, somebody up there on Olympus loves you because the gods are with you here. And that is because, of course, this is another selection from the brilliant genius Rick Riordan. And he knows how to pick writers. And when he picked you, boy, oh boy, did he hit the jackpot.
Thank you so much. And it's truly, first of all, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, what an honor. Rick Riordan is just a hero, you know, of mine. I think of so many people. He's such an amazing writer and such an amazing person. You know, to do this imprint where he's really uplifting other voices and other stories, it's the greatest thing. And I'm just so happy and excited to be part of it.
Well, I always love his books. Of course, I love his books, and I love all of the authors that he has selected over the years. And as I'm sort of shaking this book in my hand because it sparkles, and I get such a kick out of it. I mean, it's embossed, and it's shiny silver embossed. It's beautiful. Lovely illustration. Really great.
Yes.
And, of course, New York Times best-selling author right there on the cover. That must make you feel pretty good.
It sure does. It doesn't get old. Every time I see that, I'm like, yep, that's me. I did that.
That's you. You certainly have done it. And I want to say that one of the things we'll talk about your main characters in a minute. We'll talk about everybody. Mm-hmm. But I want to say particularly about Mateo, who is a pianist.
Uh-huh.
And
yes.
I certainly wish he had played at my bat mitzvah.
Me too. Me too. Absolutely. Because, wow. what a skilled young man.
Now, are you a pianist?
Not as good as Mateo. I'm definitely a musician, and I can kind of manage on piano. I play bass mostly. Really what I love doing is writing music, so it's in me. But I'm not as skilled as he is.
Well, it's just... When I read that, I thought, oh yeah, that would have been terrific. So I will let you explain this entire concept because it is brilliant and it is so wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And your writing, you know, I often, you know, one of the things they always write about an author, they'll say lyrical writing. Now, not everybody is lyrical writing, but you really are lyrical writing, and it must come from this love of music, because there is a certain, I don't know, when I got into it, I started realizing that there's something about the way you form your sentences, the way you put together the paragraphs, there is a pattern to it that is musical.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. And I think being a musician, one of the first things you have to learn how to do to be a good musician is to listen. Listening is so important, to listen to the other people in your band, listen to your own music, and listen to the world as you take in the world to play music back out into it. And I think that's also so important for a writer. And sometimes we don't stop and listen enough, especially to our own words. There's that phrase that someone loves to hear themselves talk, but are they really listening? And that's like such a key of writing. Like at its heart, writing is it goes back to the spoken word, right? It's storytelling. And so I always try to read my work out loud, even if it's while I'm writing it. I don't always get a chance to read the whole book out loud. But it's about the sound of the words as much as it is about the meaning. That's so important.
Well, I'll let you explain what this Outlaw Saints series is about. Of course, this is a sequel to Ballad and Dagger. And this last canto of the dead... Wow, it is terrific. It is really terrific.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy you enjoyed it. It's really a book of my heart. So the Outlaw Saints, it's a duology, right? I mean, two books, and this is the last one. This closes out the whole story. But we meet Matteo Matisse in book one, Ballad and Dagger. He's just a, you know, 16-year-old piano prodigy trying to live his best life, but he has to tap into secret, hidden, newfound healing powers when his community gets overtaken by this ancient evil power and falls into infighting. Matteo is called upon to heal his own community, and he has to, in the meantime, fight off demons and monsters and different kind of creatures that lurk in the shadows of his Lost Island secret history. And the girl that he's fallen in love with murders someone right in front of his face in chapter one. So he has to figure all of that out.
The two characters are so good. They're so well developed. Of course, Matteo is someone, right away I was just drawn to him. But explain about this girl, because this is interesting.
Sheila Hidalgo is, so both Matteo and Sheila kind of realize that they're actually ancient spirits. And they've known each other for centuries. Sheila is a destroyer spirit, so she's connected to this power to absolutely destroy things, but also a creator spirit at the same time. So she has all of this complexity within her, but she is also just a very regular teenage girl, you know, like Matteo, trying to live her best life. And all of these powerful forces are moving around, and she's on this island in the middle of the Caribbean that's been underwater for 16 years, and it's her homeland, but she doesn't remember it, and there's a war breaking out between different monsters on the island. She has to figure all of that out while also just being who she is.
Whoa, this all came from, where did it come from? I mean, I think you do draw upon your background. I think you probably have a few interesting characters in your family that you've drawn into this book. Like an aunt.
That's so many aunts. They're all in there somewhere. I mean, I grew up Cuban and Jewish in a house that, you know, had all these different traditions going on. We would celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah, and we just had a lot of culture and love and different types of experiences of the world all meshing together into something that always just felt like one, like very harmonious unit, even though there were different histories involved. And, you know, and then I think the process of growing up is understanding, going deeper into those histories, family histories, world histories, all of these different things, and also understanding mythology. I've always been a mythology kid. I don't know about you, but I just read Greek myths, you know, for fun all the time. Part of why I love Rick Riordan so much, right? And then, but there's myths in all different cultures of the world, and they're all so interesting, and they all get together and, you know, make new myths and all that, and I love that. And so it really is about that mishmash and complexity of when different worlds collide. And sometimes it's very ugly and painful, and sometimes it's very beautiful. And all of those different pieces are in there.
Well, I also always loved mythology. As a matter of fact, when I was in school, the only subject that I loved was Latin when I got to high school.
Mm.
But before that, I had already been deeply involved in reading mythology. I love mythology. And then when I got into Latin, it was so wonderful because, it was a subject that was a challenge to me. Because by the time I got to high school, I had already read 5,000 books. So it really was,
wow.
It was like a little bit ridiculous for me to take some of those classes.
Right. That's amazing.
It was so really funny. One time I started an advanced literature course, and they had picked one Russian to read. And I went into the, started the class, I said, but I've read them all. And the teacher said, what? I said, no, I've read them all.
Man.
And I explained that I had read War and Peace when I was 11 years old. So it was a little
bit. Oh, my God.
But Latin was a challenge, and I loved it. And because of me, it was the only year time that they ever did 4 years of Latin, because I insisted I needed to study it. And so I love mythology. And Rick has done such a wonderful thing of bringing this to life, because we read about kids who are not reading. And it is so frightening to me. I don't understand how kids cannot read. That is the joy of childhood.
It is. It is. I think, because when you were talking, I was thinking about my own experience with Latin, because I also love Greek myths, but I didn't like Latin class. And it's crazy because I love language, too. But I had a teacher I didn't get along with. And I do think that can sometimes really change things. You know, Shakespeare is a great example, right? I'm absolutely in love with Shakespeare. But that happened eventually because I found someone, a teacher who loved Shakespeare too and gave that love to us. But when people teach it and they're just like, all right, here's your homework, you know, we got to slog through this, or they act like it's like on this pedestal that nobody can reach. You know, people really can make literature inaccessible by the way that they tell children about it. And I think that is very dangerous.
Oh, it is. It's so important that the teachers have to love the subject. And when they love it.
They do.
Oh,
yes.
Oh. I mean, my
we
Latin
love it
teachers.
Too, right? Whatever it is.
My Latin teacher spent every summer in Rome. And so when she would come back, she would be like so excited to teach us. And of course, most of the kids, we started off in ninth grade with 22. By 10th grade, there were 15. By 11th grade, we were down to 8. And nobody really wanted fourth year except me and a few boys who were after me. So we ended up having fourth year. But that was because she was joyful. And this is what happens. Yeah. Like you had a Shakespeare teacher. I had a third grade teacher who told me I was stupid.
And you were obviously so much ahead of the game. Like you were so smart. But I think sometimes we don't know how to process that degree of intelligence or different kinds of intelligence, right? Because there's so many different ways to be smart. And I mean, I experienced that too. Like I would, there were certain classes that I couldn't thrive in, even though I was really smart, but I was completely flailing, you know, around trying to get my brain to click with them, and it wasn't working. There's so many different ways to learn.
One of the things I love is, and this is before the pandemic, when Rick was going out there talking to groups of kids, and he would go to an auditorium in a school, and he was treated like a rock star. I mean, kids screaming and yelling and, you know, so excited. Yeah. And I hope he's back to doing that, and I hope that you're doing that, because we need to get kids excited. And we know that kids can read if they are excited. Exactly. For goodness sakes, they read Harry Potter's 600-page books.
And
I'm sure they'll be reading this book because it's great, but we have to really have this outreach. You write so beautifully. You're, as I said, it's so, it flows, it's funny, it's action-packed, deeply thoughtful at times. All that a kid needs in a great book, and I hope that you're going to be out there too, like Rick, doing these things, getting kids excited again.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And that's the great joy of writing, besides the writing itself, which I love, is getting to see young people, especially, you know, react, find themselves in the book. And that's such a gift, you know, like, because I remember not being able to find myself in books and looking for myself, or having to translate a character into being who I was. And seeing kids, you know, not have to do that extra work and really just say, oh, that's me. Like, I saw myself. It was the first time I found myself in a book, and that book felt like home. Even if it's about magic, you know, and islands that don't exist, and monsters and everything else, they can still find something that's so true that they really, that speaks to them on a human level. And seeing people realize that and have that reaction has just been the most beautiful part of my career.
Well, you know, Rick started this entire thing with Percy Jackson because his son has ADHD and he's dyslexic.
That's right.
And so he wanted to do something for his son. And it just proved that if you write and you get a kid involved, they start reading, they start loving a subject. And it is really, I worry so much when I hear about these kids in school who cannot read. I mean, they cannot read at an eighth grade level when they're coming out of high school. I don't know, what are we going to do about it? I think more and more writers have to be really actively involved, partly pushing phonics. I'm sorry, I do not want to hear any more nonsense about not learning phonics, because that's how I learned. We were poor. I learned to read from comic books because we didn't have books.
Right.
And my mother would just run her finger under the words, and that's how we learned to read. So I was reading at 3 years old, like Beatrix Potter. And this is something important that we really all of us who are involved in the publishing world, the book world, mm-hmm. have to get these kids reading, and they would really, mm-hmm. a lot of them would just stay out of trouble. I know when I was young, I think mm-hmm. it was like, I was 18, and I I remember this so well. Somebody wanted me to go to a party where I knew, you know, there would be drinking and probably some drugs and stuff. And I was in the middle of a Dorothy Sayers mystery. And I thought uh-huh. to myself, do I want to not be able to understand this book, or do I want to continue? And I did. And it's really changed my life, because I didn't get involved wow. in all sorts of nonsense, because sure. I wanted to know the ending of the next book.
Wanted to know what happened.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. I remember reading, it was Fellowship of the Ring, the first book in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I remember so distinctly, I was really young, I was, I don't know, 11 or something. And I just remember reading it, and I was totally invested in the world. And it's the scene where it's like pouring rain, and they're trying to get out of the Shire, and all these things are happening. And I looked up, and I couldn't believe that the sun was out. I was so startled, like on a visceral level, just shocked. Like, oh, it's a sunny day? What's that? It's like the book had swallowed me whole, and I had like suddenly emerged, like totally transformed from it. And like, that's the power of story, right? Story changes you, and you change the world with story. And I think that's so beautiful and so powerful, and you're absolutely right. We have to honor that power. And we don't talk enough about how powerful that is. And it can be very dangerous, because people can use stories to hurt people, just like people can use stories to save people. And I just think we have to really be responsible as writers, as people in publishing, as whoever we are. You know, story is it's a powerful, potent thing. It's not something you can just sling around and pretend it doesn't matter, because it does. It matters so, so much.
Well, so when this idea for the book came along, I mean, did Rick contact you and say, do you have a story idea? Did you already have this idea for, two gods turned into teenagers in Brooklyn and the Caribbean? I mean, was that idea already formulated in your brain?
So I wanted to work with this imprint with Rick since I first heard about it. I've always admired him, like I said. He's always been really generous to me. He's posted reviews of my books that he's enjoyed. He's showed up in signing lines to get autographs from me, which totally, can you imagine? Rick Riordan is in the line to get his book signed from you. Like, it's completely, he's so just loving and generous as a human, and it really blew my mind. And I really wanted to work with him creatively. So I brought him this idea, which originally was just a lot more, it was for a younger audience, and it was a little more straightforward. It was just kind of Mateo, and it didn't have the whole backstory. I was working with a different mythology and all this stuff. And he said, you know, we're actually going to take a pivot and go to young adult instead of middle grade. So we're going more for teenagers, an older audience. So would you still want to do this book, but for teenagers? And I was like, absolutely. And immediately the world started getting bigger and bigger and more complex, and the history got deeper, and I just went all the way in. But the other piece that I really pulled from is that I was a paramedic for 10 years in New York City. And so, you know, I was a healer. And at the same time, I was trying to be a musician. So many of those pieces really are just came together to form the tapestry that is this book.
Mateo Matisse is a fantastic character. And San Madrigal.
San Madrigal.
Explain what it is so that people will understand.
So it's this secret island made up, totally imaginary, but that was in the Caribbean. And basically, you know, people found it when they were trying to escape. And so there's pirates there that were on the run. And there were Sephardic Jews that were escaping the Inquisition in Spain. And there's Santeros from Cuba. So all these different people got together and formed basically this new culture out of their different cultures coming together, but still held on to who they were at the same time. And it became this kind of mystical hidden island that nobody could find except the people that were supposed to be there. And over the centuries, that culture grew, and they created their own gods and demons and magic and everything else. And then suddenly the island sank 1 year after Mateo was born, so 15 years before the book starts. And everyone escaped, and they ended up in Brooklyn, as people do. And they brought with them all of their gods and their music and their monsters and everything else and their magic, and they brought it to Brooklyn. You know, and that's the story of so many of our people. You know, that's the story of diaspora.
I thought that was brilliant. Just brilliant. I love it.
Thank you.
Well, as I said, it is wonderful, and it is a very powerful story, and an uplifting story. And I think also for young people, if they read this entire series that Rick has come out with, just going from culture to culture, getting to learn about other cultures, getting to have an appreciation, whether it's for Korean culture or right. you know, whatever, to get rid of all this prejudice or all of this
yes.
Misinformation about people,
exactly.
and just to realize that we're all one and we could all work together, although we need some of this battles going on just to lighten things up. But, you know, it's just, you've captured it, and I'm sure he is very proud of you. Well, I know. I can tell by the cover. When he's proud of somebody, he says, give him a heck of a great cover. And don't
they sure
you love
did
the
that.
Paper?
They sure did.
I love the paper.
The paper. And did you see the, I don't know if you have the copy that has the map or the end pages.
Oh, yes.
Like a desk.
Oh, yes.
And isn't that beautiful? I love that so much.
I mean,
they did amazing work.
I think, and what it does also by giving young people this kind of a book that feels so good, that has this, it's tactile, it goes into your
That's
system.
Right.
You never forget when you hold a really great book in your hand. You feel the paper,
right.
you feel the importance of it. I know people are going to read it on Kindle, and I understand that, but there really is nothing quite like holding the book in your hand.
That's right. It's very special. And when people put so much care and love into this book, you know, it matters. Like, you feel it when you hold it. It's true.
I love what you wrote here. What is lost is never lost.
That's right.
And
that's right.
That is such... your writing is so clever and so touching. I love the part where you just sort of slow it down. And as I said, in a musical way, that you have this, you know, really wonderful, wonderful tempo. And then you come to a part where it just slows down and you just...
Right.
It's a moment to relish. And I want to thank you so much, Daniel Jose Older, for being on Joy on Paper. The name of the book is Last Canto of the Dead, an Outlaw Saints novel. Well, the final one, according to you, but
right.
No, I don't know about that.
We'll see.
We'll see. But again, it's a beautiful book, wonderful writing, and your website
so
is just... Your name, right?
My name is DanielJoseOlder.net. And on there, I actually have online classes for writing. So if you're interested in becoming a writer, by all means, check them out. They're video classes, and they can be very helpful for folks. And lots of information about all my books and my comics, my Star Wars writing, all of that is on there, DanielJoseOlder.net.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the comics. I'm running out of time, but people do go to his website because it is fascinating. As I said, I learned to read from Little Lulu Comics.
That was it.
And, of course, Scooby-Doo and Veronica and all of those. That's how I learned to read from comic books, because we were poor.
They're great.
We were poor.
I love that you said that, because I do think, I know you're running out of time, but I do think it's so important that, like, kids are also encouraged to read comic books. You know, sometimes adults will get very, like, snitty about what is really a book. And comic books and graphic novels are such important parts of literature that need to be honored and recognized. And young people love them. And they read because of them. And that's such a gift. So I'm glad you said that.
Absolutely. So everybody, go to Daniel's website. And it's DanielJoseOlder.net, and you will find a lot of great stuff there. Again, thank you so much for being on.
It's so great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take good care. All right. Bye-bye.
An amazing author. And he worked as a paramedic. You never know what life will bring you. And you never know when you meet somebody, and maybe they're working as a paramedic, they're working as a nurse, they're working in a bakery. You never know. They might turn out to be a great writer, as Daniel certainly has. And boy, oh boy, Rick Riordan loves him. Everybody, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.